Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcasts currently feature the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening.
Of the book of Acts, and so we thought maybe you might have forgotten some of it, especially Acts 2, and so we wanted to share with you a Reader's Digest condensed version. I think that's fair. Are you ready? Over there, sir. Are you ready? Let's watch this together.
After being crucified, Jesus comes back to life and hangs out with the apostles. He tells them that they will receive the Holy Spirit and be his witnesses. Jesus takes off. The disciples are gathered together on Pentecost when the Holy Spirit arrives. Tongues of fire hover over them, hence the logo. The disciples speak in tongues. Peter preaches the first sermon. 3,000 people get saved. God, 1. Satan, 0. The end of Acts chapter 2 is written, providing mission statements for churches in the 21st century. Peter heals a lame man and preaches another sermon. Another 2,000 people get saved. Peter and John are thrown in jail. They are released. Peter and John celebrate with the other believers and pray for continued boldness. God rocks the house, literally. Ananias and Sapphira lie about their offering to the church and are struck dead. Contributions skyrocket. The apostles preach again. They are thrown in jail again. An angel releases them. They preach some more. The apostles nominate 7 deacons to look after widows and orphans, including Stephen, a man full of faith in the Holy Spirit. Stephen is stoned. Present at the stoning is a young man named Saul. We'll come back to that later. Persecution breaks out. Believers scatter. Things look bad for the church. Or do they? Wherever the believers go, they preach the word, thus fulfilling the Great Commission. God, 2, Satan, still, 0. Philip meets a eunuch. The eunuch is baptized. Meanwhile, Saul is on his way to persecute believers in Damascus when Jesus appears. Saul is blinded. Saul is healed. Saul repents and begins preaching to the same people he intended to persecute. God, 3, Satan, well, you get the idea. Peter has a vision of unclean animals. Peter has an encounter with unclean Gentiles. He gets it. God has extended salvation to the Gentiles. Major game changer. Herod is eaten by worms. Barnabas and Paul start working together, traveling and preaching the word. By the way, I'm going to call Saul Paul now. I don't have time to explain why. Still with me? In Lystra, crowds attempt to worship Paul and Barnabas as gods. They refuse to be worshipped and are stoned. The Lystrians are a tough crowd. Paul and Barnabas survive. Paul and Barnabas part ways. Paul and Silas team up. Timothy joins Paul and Silas. Paul circumcises Timothy. Paul receives a vision of a man from Macedonia asking for help. The party leaves for Macedonia. Spoiler alert, they are thrown in prison yet again. They sing. An earthquake loosens their shackles, but they stick around to lead the jailer to Christ. Yada, 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 more preaching. In Troas, Paul preaches for so long that a man falls asleep and plummets out a window to his death. The man is resurrected. Paul preaches some more. The man wishes he was dead. Paul returns to Jerusalem, where he is promptly arrested again. He is visited by the Lord, who assures him that Paul will testify about him in Rome. Paul feels better. Paul is transferred to Caesarea, where his case is caught up in red tape for 2 years. Finally, Paul appeals to Caesar and is put on a fast ship to Rome. The shipwrecks. Paul is bitten by a snake. At last, Paul makes it to Rome. He is placed under house arrest and continues to preach the gospel while awaiting trial. And that is all we know of Paul's story. Somewhere in there, he finds the time to write a few letters. Today, they comprise much of the New Testament. The New Testament is also where you'll find the book of Acts. The end.
I may never see the promised land. I may never see the promised land. And yet we'll take the journey and walk it hand in hand. If not now, tell me when. If not now, tell me when. If not now, tell me when. We may never see this moment or place and time again. If not now, if not now, tell me when. We'll work until it's done. Every daughter, every son, every soul that ever longed for something better, something brighter. It will take a change of heart for this to mend. And it will take a change of heart for this to mend. But miracles do happen every shining now and then. If not now, if not now, tell me when. If not now, tell me when. If not now, tell me when. We may never see this moment or place and time again. If not now, if not now, tell me when. If not now, tell me when.
We have spent the last 8 weeks walking through a worship series called Yes to the Mess. And we've been holding together two things, the book of Acts and this text, really, which is called Yes to the Mess, Surprising Leadership Lessons from Jazz. So we're trying to see how does the style and the genre of jazz music, what might that teach us about being people of faith in this day and in this age? And so this is our last worship in this series as we look together at those early church folks in the book of Acts and at jazz musicians in this day. And I want to begin this morning with a quote from the author of this book, Frank Barrett, and just invite you to hear these words. This book is an invitation for leaders to take a robust approach to innovation, to create vital cultures that enhance discovery rather than falling into the narrow predictability of the known world. It's an invitation for leaders to break open some of the rigid conventions that they live within, to experience what it's like to leap beyond certitude. Saying yes to the mess challenges us all to create engaged, passionate, and imaginative cultures and communities in helping us all progress toward a system of well-being and hope. Jazz musicians seek to live lives of radical receptivity. Human beings are at their best when they do the same thing. When they're open to the world and able to notice expansive horizons of possibility, fully engage in skillful activity, summon responses, and lead to new discoveries. And so the question he's asking in this book is, how do we organize ourselves to open up to those new possibilities? And so as we close this worship series, we want us to share a story of the followers of Jesus who were seeking to live lives of radical receptivity. We hope that as you listen to this, that you'll experience some folks long, long ago who were saying yes to the mess. We hope you'll wonder about what it might be like for them and what it might be like for you to say yes in this day. We hope you'll hear of a people who were open to the Spirit and they were able to notice some of the expansive horizons of possibilities. They were fully engaged in practicing their faith. They didn't get caught up or boxed in by certitude. They simply stepped in and played and saw what happened. We hope that you'll hear their story and that you'll wonder about your own. What would it be like for you to say yes to the mess, to root your life in grace and grow in faith and reach in love today? So I want to begin. 50 days after the Passover, it's where we were last Sunday. Wind and fire sweep through. The ground dances like it did for many of us just a couple of days ago. And people are transformed. They're able to hear and to understand in ways that they had never actually experienced before. Something profound shook the ground of certainty on which they stood, and they opened up to new horizons, new possibilities. And at that moment, Peter rose to take a solo. His sermon hit a groove. And I imagine the folks that were in that groove with him started to listen with a new sense of generosity. They were imagining what it could be like to comp with the Holy Spirit, to accompany the Holy Spirit in this song. Peter hits that groove, and then he plays a chord that no one expected in a key that could have fallen completely flat. He's like, we're all in this together. Clear eyes, full hearts, can't. But instead of saying can't lose, he throws out something totally different. He didn't really say that, did he? This is the clunker that Peter goes with. Therefore, let the entire house of Israel know with certainty that God has made Jesus both Lord and Messiah, this Jesus whom you crucified. The folks there, like, wait, we were with you. But why did you play that key? Why go in that direction? Like, they weren't literally the ones that crucified Jesus. 50 days later, what are the odds that we gathered the exact same group of people in the place that had just put Jesus to death? That's not who was in the room. See, I think the key they would rather hear was, Jesus has been made the Messiah, even though those other people did that really bad stuff. Isn't that a better way to frame it? Like, not us. Those other people did that. It's not our fault. We're not the ones. I think you've got the wrong group here, Peter. This is our band. Remember? We were all playing together. We were jamming. But that's the hook. The creator of the cosmos enters into the world in the form of a vulnerable child born to a nobody in the middle of nowhere. And that child grows into his own belovedness and starts to jam with folks. Folks that no one thought you were supposed to play music with. And they start to lay down grooves that no one had heard before. They start to teach musically challenged folks like me how to hear God's song and to find the courage within ourselves to start to play along, as scary as that can feel. But that was too much. It was too much back then, and the truth is it's probably too much today. We can't handle it. So the powers that be back then silence or try to silence God's song by putting Jesus to death. We all do it. You know, religious and political leaders back then and everyday folks today. We're deaf to God's rhythm and we try to silence God's song. And that sense of guilt can crash down and it can overwhelm us. And we can want to just walk off the stage. But Peter inverts the chord. Did you stay with him in that song? He says, we might have tried to silence God's song by putting Jesus to death, but God has made Jesus Messiah. God does this. It's like we took our hands off the keys and we stopped playing, but somehow the song kept going. See, we thought that it was all about us, that we're soloing, but it turns out that God never stopped comping us, even us when we didn't want to be comped. And now when they heard this, those folks who were gathered there with Peter, it says that they were cut to the heart. For me, that's one of the main lessons of jazz. You're cut to the heart. When you're playing together with this ensemble, and you lay down what feels like the worst chord, it's as soon as you play it, you think, how could I go there? Why did I go there? But those folks around you are listening generously enough that they go there with you. They sense this enormous horizon and possibility, and they say, we're going to say yes to that mess and see where it goes. And then soon enough, you're back in the pocket and you're jamming again. See, God could have just said no. God could have said, I've had enough. I'm taking my music and I'm out of here. But instead, the Spirit keeps playing. And I imagine the truth is that those folks who were gathered with Peter, I imagine they came for a concert. They're like, let's see what happens, and we've got the rest of our day, brunch, and then we're going to watch the rest of the CrossFit games, and then we're going to... They had their thing that they were going to do, right? But it turns out that they all got called up on stage. They were there just to witness, not to be a part of it. And there they were. The fancy biblical language is that they repented and that they're baptized. It's just another way of saying that they heard a song played that helped them see the world differently, and they said, I want to go with that song. I want to play that music. And then they got on stage. And when they get there, they look to Peter and they say, well, this is good news for me. Because they look to Peter and they say, what are we supposed to play? And at that moment, Peter could have organized them, and Peter could have said, well, you'll be my woodwinds, and you guys will play these instruments. Actually, no, Charlie, let me have that one. I'm going to give that to Michael. You play this. There could have been all kinds of organizing. He could have gone back to his office and said, I've got sheets of music. This is what you're going to play, and you're going to play it just like this. Everyone is going to tune themselves on my instrument on three. One, two. But he doesn't do any of that. He doesn't do any of that at all. He's more like Duke Ellington, who says, these are eight bars, play. You all can do this. Play. You guys can play this song. And they hit a groove that pastors long when they get together with other pastors in small groups to say, like, our church is in a groove. This is where we are. It's awesome. The music is incredible. This is what their groove sounded like, and I think you'll see it up there. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and fellowship, to the breaking of bread and prayers. Awe came upon everyone because many wonders and signs were being done by the apostles. All who believed were together and had all things in common. And if you're a person out here who's thinking you're going to go out and start a new church in the next few years or down the road, listen to this, because most of the churches that are started in the world, like, this is what they use, so these words will be important for you. All who believed were together and had all things in common. They would sell their possessions and goods and distribute the proceeds to all as any had need. Day by day, as they spent time together in the temple, they broke bread at home and ate their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having the goodwill of all people. And day by day, the Lord added to their number those who were being saved, those who were hearing that song and saying, I want to play that, and then joining the band. They had minimal structure, and then they hit a groove playing together. They were jamming in a way that we would love to experience. Maybe you can imagine it. You can imagine your own kitchen table breaking bread, gathering at a home to eat together, having glad and generous hearts. You could imagine, as our children go out from this space now, doing the exact same thing or throughout the summer. That's what it looked like. That's what it felt like. It was amazing for that moment. Day by day, God added to their numbers folks who were rooting their lives in grace and growing in faith and reaching in love. If only we could jam there forever. And so if you Google search Acts 2 Church, you are going to find like gazillions of churches that are like, we're going to be the Acts 2 church. Everyone wants to be an Acts 2 church. It's kind of like a reggae song to me, right? Like, everybody's sharing their possessions. This is as sweet as it gets. We're on it. You never hear anybody be like, I'm an Acts 5 church. No one says an Acts 5 church. They say Acts 2 church. Because the truth is, three chapters later, the church is falling apart. Let's just be an Acts 2 church. Lop off the rest of it, right? Acts 2. But it never even gets mentioned the rest of the time, but it's this awesome utopian vision of what church could be, and so many of us have been hurt by what church really is that we think, I'm out of here. I'm never coming back to this stuff. It's ridiculous. Why would I do that? It was true back then. If any truth that our story shares in Acts, it's that people have been saying yes to the mess over and over again, and it doesn't mean that you find a way of being perfect. It just means that you're going to gather with the folks around you, and you're going to recognize that you need God in all of this with you. Because by Acts 5, it's like a few bars in musical language, God's already killing the first dissenter. We sing about him all the time in here. Like, we do that song. I won't sing it for you because that would be embarrassing. But Ananias, tell me what kind of man Jesus is. We sing that song all the time. So there's different Ananiases in the New Testament. But this Ananias and his wife, they sell off a piece of property. 3 chapters after Utopian Church, they sell off a piece of property. And they're like, nobody's going to know, Warren. We'll just sell it. No one will know. And they try to keep it for themselves. It turns out that if anything is clear in this text, it's that God does not like folks that go solo. God does not want you to go solo. And so they try to go solo, and then Ananias falls over dead. 3 chapters after that perfect utopian vision of what church could be, every jazz musician knows an Ananias. Actually, truth be told, every jazz musician's been an Ananias, because they go into a club, and that person tells them, I'm going to pay everybody $50 to play. And then at the end of the night, the bar manager comes out and is like, here's $20 a person. Well, wait a second, what do I do with that? Because you had this promise, and now it's this one. And so they think, well, if I give 40 here, then I can give 10 to this person. And that's what Ananias was trying to figure out. Like, how can I keep it for myself? And God breaks in and says, I want my people to be abundantly clear that it's not about soloing. It's about comping. That's where God meets us, and that's where God calls us. And that spirit-led utopian falls apart. But in the mess of that, they start to pick each other up. They start to hit another groove. And it keeps going, and they keep playing. And by the end of that time, in ancient biblical language, it's like they're finally to Rome. This little ragtag group of people that started in an upper room, people speaking different languages, ends up in the pinnacle of power, learning how to be church. That's the movement of Acts. That's the mess that they live in and that they find. It's like a group of ragtag musicians here in Sacramento, playing and growing, and then finding themselves at the Lincoln Center. That's our story over and over. We're a people who are called by God to say yes to the mess and learn to comp with one another and with God's Spirit. Frank Barrett writes, sometimes leadership means letting go of the dream of certainty, leaping in, acting first, and reflecting later on the impact of the action. And what if that's what practicing faith is like too? Growing in faith means letting go of the dream of certainty, leaping in, acting first, and reflecting later on the impact of that action. See, if folks hadn't shown up long ago to that upper room in Acts 2, it wouldn't have mattered if the Spirit came down. If no one was there, it doesn't matter that the wind and the fire come. It doesn't matter that the earth dances. But they did. And as soon as the earth started to dance like that, they could have just walked off. It could have been like, peace, that is some crazy stuff. I'm not going that way. And even if they started to play, they could have bounced as soon as they were given 8 bars and said, play. They could have been like, you know what? I need more lessons than this. This is simply inadequate. I am going to keep looking for a different way because this kind of structure is not detailed enough for me. They could have looked for another career as they were burned by the guy who was supposed to give them money and instead kept it to himself. They could have tried a different style of music. As soon as like jazz went underground and then jazz they say is dead, and they could have been like, well, I'm done with that. I'm going to find a different way to play. But here we are. We're here today because countless folks have said yes to the mess and tried to navigate what it's like to live in God's love together with other people. And sometimes there are moments of it that feel like Acts 2, utopian. It's like this power that I can't put words to. And other times it's the falling apartness of Acts 5 and then the rest of the story. But God longs for us to keep coming back and saying yes to figuring this out, to learning to play together. And so you might be a person who's like, you know what? I might say yes to the mess, but I need some more lessons. And I hope that you'll see folks around you who want to accompany you. I hope that it won't feel too scary to think that, you know what, none of us have it all figured out, but all of us have something to teach one another as we start to play. Maybe you'll take that risk and that challenge and you'll think, I'm going to sign up for Blueprint, or I'm going to go to a kitchen table and I'm going to try to witness. That was the push in Acts. How are you going to share with other folks the good news that you know in your life? Maybe it's really practical for you. Maybe the mess is literally having 20-some-odd children at church next Sunday, and we don't know what we're going to do with them. And you're like, I'm not afraid of that. I'm not afraid. I'm going to say yes to that. And I'm going to take a chance that God might show up to me in that 4-year-old or that 8-year-old that wants to create something. Maybe that's you. Maybe you're going to say yes by showing up an hour early and making some coffee and then welcoming folks as they come through there, because you know that you were burned by the church, and you know that in all likelihood that person who's walking in has been too, and that you can, in the most subtle way, help them feel a new song or hear a new song that God's playing. But maybe you're afraid to play jazz because you're afraid that if I play jazz, I have to reject every other style of music. That's all I can do. So I'm not going to go that route because I want to keep my options open. That's fine, but I don't think you're ever going to play any music, to be honest. I think you're just not going to play anything, because none of these folks that play jazz would say, I'm never going to play another style of music. They would say, this is what I live and move and have my being in, and it allows me to interact with all these other styles of music in a way that I have something to offer. And so we hope that you'll want to play jazz, that you'll want to follow Jesus. Doesn't mean that you have to, like, stay in that forever, but it does mean that you have to say yes at some moment in your life. Maybe, though, you're just afraid because you're too tired. You feel out of tune. And I want to close with the best news from that Acts story to me. And that best news is that Peter looks out at those folks and he says, you all have done this to God. You turned your back on that vulnerable child that grew up as a beloved person and wanted to teach you a new way. You said no to that, but in spite of all of it, God keeps saying yes. God's song is not going to stop. God's song keeps going, and God will find a way to play on, because God says yes to the mess. And God's not afraid to play that song with us. So may we find the courage to take that first lesson or to play that chord, to listen as we jam.
By the grace of the Lord, I've come a long way. By the grace of the Lord, I've come a long way. He's been my bread when I was hungry. He's been my company keeper every time I get a little lonely. By the grace of the Lord, I've come along.